Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
All right, let us say hello to Eddie Cha, the head striking coach over at Fight Ready. And they have been in the news quite a bit. There have been a lot of things going on over at Fight Ready, some big names stepping on the mats these days. And it's always great to catch up with just one of the best minds in the sport, Mr. Eddie Cha. Eddie, how are you, sir? Good to see you.
I'm good. Doing good, man. How are you?
I'm doing great. So you guys, over the last several months, have assembled quite the all-star team over at Fight Ready. Obviously, a lot of established names have been there for years. We last spoke when the Korean Zombie was getting ready to fight Dan Ige, obviously Henry Cejudo, but we've recently seen Zhang Weili train over there ahead of her fight with Rose Namajunas, Davis Figueroa, Eric Anders, Marco Mattson, and others. Even John Jones has been getting some work over at Fight Ready. So what has that been like for you, getting to work with some of these fighters, most notably the former world champions like Zhang Figueroa and even John Jones as of late?
It's been great. It's been truly an honor. Don't forget Kelvin Gastelum. He just moved out here as well. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Our man, Kelvin. It's been great. A lot of it has to do with, you got to give credit what credit is due, is we call him C4 now. The other C stands for coach, Henry Cejudo. A lot of guys been reaching out to them and him, and he's been doing a great job of kind of bringing some of the guys over here. And so it's keeping us super busy, to say the least.
Are you looking right at him right now? Is he right there?
Henry? No. He just went out of town, actually. I don't know if I can say where, but yeah, he's out of town
today. Fair enough. So let's talk about Zhang Weili, because we saw a very competitive strawweight title fight at MSG this past month, UFC 268. Super close. I haven't watched it a second time, but you know, when you're covering the sport and these big events are happening, you're doing like 15 things at once. But watching it live, I did score the fight for Zhang Weili, but it was very, very close. In the grand scheme of things, Eddie, it's sort of an under the radar fight overall, considering it was on the same card with Usman Covington too. Of course, that insane fight between Justin Gaethje and Michael Chandler. What were your big takeaways from Zhang's performance in the second go around with Rose Namajunas and just the fight overall?
So did you score it for Weili the second time when you saw the fight?
I haven't watched it a second time, but watching it live, I scored the first three rounds for Zhang and then 4 and 5 for Rose.
I had it exactly the same. We learned a lot that camp, especially cornering during the fight, but I definitely had it rounds 1, 2, and 3. During the first round, we were watching it. Captain Eric and I were talking. We were talking to Hmong, the translator. So a lot of times I was like this. So lesson learned, I'll definitely put a translator in front of me and I'll sit behind them so where I can look over their shoulders. In the first round, I thought she might have gotten dropped, and then watching back, she slipped. So I definitely gave her the first round. Second round, again, I thought it was super close. And then watching it again, she buckled her with that left hook. She kind of stumbled Rose going backward. I think she held her down for a little bit longer than, you know, they both had one takedown apiece. So I think the striking aspect, I gave her round 2, and round 3 wasn't even close. She took her down, mounted her. And then again, 4 and 5, I give to Rose as well. But it was a close fight. You know, a lot of times people say, oh, well, she lost the fifth round, the championship round. It's still only one round, you know. And I can't talk about why she kind of looked a little tired and stuff like that. I never talk about anything unless the fighters talk about it first. So I won't kind of get into details on that, but I thought it was a great fight. I thought we made the improvements in a short amount of time, and I thought she did enough to win the fight.
I thought the 49-46 was egregious, to be honest with you. Either way, like 48-47, either way, I'm fine with the, for the 49-46 for Rose. I just didn't buy it all.
Agreed. And unfortunately, those are the only three people that actually count how they scored it.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't matter how we scored at the end of the day, but moving on, there's so much I want to talk to you about because I don't get to talk to you that often, but I do want to talk about John Jones coming in because obviously he's dealing with some things right now that have made headlines. He's been his own worst enemy in a lot of different occasions, but at the same time, he's one of, if not the greatest fighters to ever compete in the sport of mixed martial arts. Did you know personally that John was going to be coming in, or were you as surprised as a lot of other people when you just saw John in the gym?
No, I did. Henry gave me a call and told me that John reached out to him and he's interested in coming out and stuff like that. So, you know, we kind of prepared some things to work on and was super excited to have him here.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was kind of like one of my other questions. Like when fighters come in, like, are you privy to that information ahead of time? Like, are there discussions amongst the coaches where it's like, hey, this fighter wants to come in. What do you think? Are there like group conversations like that that take place, especially, you know, with everything going on with John? Different kinds of circumstances, sort of what happened with Jackson Wink. Mike Winklejohn goes in the MMA hour and said he wasn't even welcome there at the moment. Like, are you guys having conversations like that ahead of time? Like, I know Henry called you and just said like, hey, he might be coming in, but what's that process like for you guys overall?
So everything that we decide is kind of as a team. It starts with our owner, Dave Zonwine. He calls each and every one of us and say, do you guys want this individual here? And we'll say yes or no and why. And then we kind of go from there. And for me, it was a no-brainer. I think people make mistakes, whether you make one, two, or three. I mean, John's just under a microscope. When he does anything wrong, it's magnified and so forth. But if you know him as an individual, and I don't know him as well as other people, but I've heard from other people kind of doing my research is, nobody's had Greg's never had a problem with him. Gibson never had a problem with him as an individual. You know, I don't think anybody agrees with the mistakes he's made, but at the same time, we all make mistakes, you know, and I was super happy to work with him. I just judge him as individuals. I said, let's just not judge until we get to know him first. And I was super impressed as a human being and as an athlete.
So personally, in your eyes, there was no hesitation to have John come in.
For me, no. I don't think that we're able to change anybody unless somebody's willing to change. But I mean, to me, we've met it. He's come back and forth a few times already, and the dude's a class act to me. I have zero problems with him, and I'm excited to work with him.
And just on the fighter coach side of things, like, you know, obviously the court stuff that's got to play out, so we don't know what's going to happen there, but. Just from what you've seen, what has John brought to the gym in terms of his presence, the vibe he brings to the rest of the team, if you will, like sort of a leadership role, so to speak? Because obviously when these young fighters see John Jones in the gym, they're going to want to work with him and try to improve. So what kind of presence has he brought to the table in the limited time that you've got to spend with him?
So John is, we have two different type of camps that we run for fighters. He's in the category of super camp, like Zombie, <Okay. laughs> Henry, Mark Madsen, you know, and everybody, all these other guys. And so when he comes in, we do a completely private workouts, you know, people around us and so forth. But I will tell you what type of individual he is. Obviously, the word got out that he was in Arizona. There'd be tons of people coming in, you know, wanting pictures and autographs. Even while we're working out, you'd see like little five-year-old kids with their parents and stuff waiting for him to sign. During workouts, he'd look over. How you doing, little man? Is this your son, sir? How you doing? Can I come over and say hi? Like, he'll literally take the time. Any kid that he sees, he's going to take the time to say hi, you know, take pictures, whatever they want. There was a couple, I think it was like 9-10 fans outside. We had the door shut on a Saturday. Same thing, goes outside, takes pictures with everybody, says hi, you know, like, it just, to me, you can kind of tell in an individual how they act around kids. It makes a big difference. And it's been great. Another thing is Eric Anders has been in camp. I don't know how well they've known each other or anything else. But, you know, the next week he came, I was like, what do you want to work on? He goes, oh, I'm here for Eric, whatever he wants. You know, I'm like, John, you're too big for like, I appreciate it. You're not a light heavy no more. You're an actual heavyweight. He's like 250, 255 right now. And Eric's like, what? He ain't, he's not helping me do nothing. You know, he's too big. So, I mean, he's just nothing but giving from what we've seen. I love what we see from him. I love the individual. I love the talks that we have. And he's a man of God. I'm a man of God. We're both Christians. And I think that's a good starting ground for us. We're all forgiven through the grace of God. So I don't care as many mistakes as individuals make, as long as they learn from them.
You know, I'm sure you guys have a conversation. I don't even know if you can answer this, but do you know if he plans to stick around there? Like, he says he'll be ready to come back in 2022. Dana White won't even talk about John fighting again until it's 2022. Would it be fair to say, I don't even know if you can say this or not, that when he is ready to return and he has a fight on the books, that he will be a fight ready fighter, at least in some way? Or is it too soon to even say that?
We do have a plan. We did talk about that, but if he doesn't say anything, I'm not one to really say. I always wait and listen. Oh, okay, he said it. I can go ahead and regurgitate that. But yeah, I can't really say too much about it. But I can tell you that he's hungry. He's learning. He's eager to get going again. And hopefully we'll see him in there soon.
How do you think he matches up with Francis Ngannou, Ciryl Gane? Because you would think the UFC will look to match John up with the winner if they can from that title fight in January. How do you think he matches up with both those guys from, you know, just a little bit you've seen of this heavyweight version of John Jones?
Honestly, like we talked about, I think he's one of the best to ever do it. He matches up well against anybody. The question is, how does Ngannou match up against him? You know, how does Gane match up against him? Because Johns can do it anyway. He can wrestle one guy or he can strike with one guy. He can go southpaw. He can go to orthodox. He can box. He can kickbox. His cage wrestling is amazing. You know, his elbows are notorious. I think what separates him, what I've seen, and I kind of went back and watched his fights before working with him too, is just his mindset. He knows how to win. If you watch that Dominic Reyes fight, which I thought was really, really close, by the way, he just knows when to like walk away with this fight. He knows I got to win this round. I know he knows when to win these next 2 minutes of the round. I think the greats, even Henry Cejudo, is kind of the same thing. When he sees blood or he kind of goes at it, he goes right for it right away. And so the greats are just amazing finishers, and they're just winners.
I appreciate that. No more John Jones talk. We'll switch gears. Davison Figueiredo getting ready to fight Brandon Moreno again. First fight, great fight. It was a draw. The loss point for Davison obviously loomed huge in the overall scoring. Second fight was this incredible moment for Brandon Moreno. Maybe the most memorable.
Can you turn that off real quick, please? Sorry.
Oh, it's okay.
Just so I get to read the post.
Oh, no, I hear you. I got people downstairs too. But anyways, so Moreno in the second fight, I mean, it's one of those, like when you think about 2021 in MMA, him winning the title is one of those moments that just sticks at the top of your mind. It's probably a vision that Davison's probably had to avoid or maybe uses as motivation. But this third fight, he's changing gears. He's working at fight ready. What has that been like? What have you seen from him that gives you confidence that this third fight's going to be different than the second one?
He's working at fight ready. he's working with the great Henry Cejudo. Figueiredo's amazing. You know, I didn't really know him personally as an individual until he got here. He likes to joke around. He's a good family man. I know he got here early because the fight got pushed back to January 22nd. He missed his kids so much. He had to go back home. We told him to stay. He goes, man, I can't do it without my kids. So it just shows what type of individual he is. He's a workhorse, I tell you. I mean, he is a big flyweight. I mean, the kid has like 8% body fat, already six pack. And I'm like, oh my gosh. It's like, maybe he should go try to be double champ after this fight. But I will tell you that we're working on a lot of tendencies that he did well, trying to improve on those and working on some of the things that he made a few mistakes in the second fight. So he's, I think Moreno's an unbelievable fighter. I was a big fan of his. I was so impressed with his last two fights. I know he's managing Jason House really well. So I did call him and tell him that I will be involved in this camp. And we wish the best for each other. Whoever wins, we said, hey, we're going to be more than happy to lose to whoever. But I will tell you, in Figueiredo, I kind of explained to the guys, we're talking about game plans and everything else. I was like, we have the Francis Ngannou at 125. I mean, this was the most feared guy before the first Moreno they fought for the first time. And so I think we need to start putting that fear back with good power shots and stuff like that. But then getting to work with him in camp, I mean, he's got unbelievable kicks. He's a really good wrestler. He does like to wrestle. You know, he's had a great submission with against Perez. He's got a great guillotine and so forth. So we have so many weapons, just kind of like, which one do we use? This one or this one? So we compiled a good game plan together, and we plan to use a little bit of everything, depending on the time of the round and so forth. And got a great coaching staff, great, flew out a bunch of sparring partners for him. We're actually bringing in two more just in case one or two go down already. They've been really exciting to watch his sparring rounds.
How have he and Henry meshed together? Because you can make the argument that either one of those two guys, if you're talking like 4 or 5 years ago, this division, I mean, it was gone for a little while, and now it's back. It's red hot right now. And Henry, in a lot of people's eyes, is the guy to thank for that. And in a lot of people's eyes, Davison and the power he presents and some of the finishes that he's had, he's to thank for that. So seeing those two guys, arguably the two guys who saved this division in a lot of people's eyes, what has that been like to watch?
It's been great. It's been super exciting, even from the Wei Li camp, of seeing Henry evolve as a coach, because we know how great he is as an athlete. And then usually a lot of the great athletes aren't the best coaches. And so to see him transition and show what he does well, the mindset of a champion, what they should be thinking during fight week, and going through the whole process of him mentoring Wei Li and Biggie, it's really interesting. And then hopefully he's going to be, there's rumors he's coming back too next year. So I don't know where he's going to fit in at 25, 35, 45, but I would love to see him go after that third title, something that no one's ever been able to accomplish, you know? But I'm not sure what his plans are right now. He's Coach C. So, but it's been great to watch those two work together. And that obviously crossed our mind in the beginning, because these guys should have fought, you know, they could have potentially fought, and how interesting of a fight that would have been. But now they're two peas in a pod. They're really tight.
Well, you mentioned it, so I might as well ask. And since Henry Cejudo has come out many times and said that he's coming back, and even his manager has done many interviews and said that he's planning on coming back, let me just ask you, you hear rumors, but if you were a betting man, if I handed you $100, Eddie, and you could only put it on whether or not Henry fights or not, are you putting that $100 on Henry fighting in 2022? Do you feel confident that that happens?
I don't know if it's $100 would do it, but I'm going to say yes. I think he misses the sport. I think he misses competing. I think hopefully they'll get it done. I feel like we missed that little small window when Volkanovski didn't have an opponent and Holloway was fighting a year. But then again, I understand the UFC's perspective where they don't want a hit and run, but I think Henry is not looking to fight just once. You know, he wants to really come back. He's still young. He didn't really take too much damage in his career besides the Marias shoulder and everything. But yeah, I think he's picked up a couple new tools, especially after the Dominic camp, the distance game, the kicking game, all these are like new toys for him. And when he has a new toy, he wants to play with that toy. You can see him in the gym showing guys and stuff like that. So I think he likes coaching, but it's just making him miss fighting even more.
Well, we look forward to seeing that. I do want to talk about Eric Anders. He's fighting this Saturday. He's been singing the praises of the team ever since he did his first camp there, but he's got a big one stepping in to fight Andre Muniz. And in my opinion, Andre Muniz, despite some of the finishes he's had, the surge he's been on, he might be the most under the radar middleweight in the world right now. And Eric Anders is stepping in a pretty interesting spot here on short notice. So Eric is not a guy who shies away from challenges. I'm sure he's loving this right now. How is he sort of mentally looking at this fight with Andre Muniz? Because I mean, he'll fight anybody, but this is an interesting kind of matchup for him.
Yeah, definitely. At first I just said no right off the bat, cause it was only 5 weeks. But then he did have, we were in camp for 5-6 weeks before he caught COVID. And so he took it off. I think he got a negative after 4 days. So I don't know if it was a false positive or what it was, but to the number 15 guy 5 weeks ago, I would say no. I think he is underrated, but then at the same time, if you ask anybody, who's he fighting? And then say Munoz, I don't know the name. He's the guy that submitted Jacare. Go, oh, okay. Everybody knows who he is. So I don't know how underrated he is if you submit Jacare. the kid's phenomenal. I mean, he's got great jiu-jitsu. He's got great footwork. He's got a good jab, left kicks, obviously, check hooks and so forth. But I think Eric gets the job done. We wouldn't say yes to a fight if we didn't believe we match up well or could win. And so it was kind of similar to the fight that he took before. Was another jiu-jitsu specialist. It was a little different style of jiu-jitsu, so we had to tweak some things. But it's going to be a great fight. I think he matches up really well. Eric's been improving every camp. Like, if you see the footage in the film that before we got our hands on him, I've always seen the potential in Eric. I told Eric a long time ago, I called Jason House and told him, I want to work with Eric Anders. And then he goes, every gym wants to work with Eric Anders. Name any coach that doesn't want to work with him. So we went down the list. He goes, that coach called that. And when he started losing, I still was calling Jason. I want to work with Eric Anders. I go, there's something in this kid, something about this kid. I really want to work with this guy. So unfortunately, I got to work with him. But if you see from camp to camp, his footwork, his distance, his stance, his kick starting to improve, his wrestling is improving, his jiu-jitsu, just his fight IQ in general, setting his feet when he throws. I mean, he's not as flat-footed. This camp, again, I feel like he's leveled up again with his hand speed going to the body. And I can't give too much away of what he's improved on and what we've been working on, but it's going to be a really exciting fight. And if he wins this, hopefully he breaks top 15.
Yeah. I think Eric's one of those great examples in MMA where, you know, obviously he was known from his college football days playing in Alabama. I'm sure he's thrilled that Alabama just beat Georgia and the whole thing. And, but just seeing just his mindset, not just in the octagon, but out of it, like learning about being financially stable and saving your money and investing properly, like it like opened his eyes. He's a totally different guy interviewing him now than he was like 3 years ago. Have you sort of noticed like all the evolution outside of just fighting Eric Anders over the time that you've spent with him?
Oh, 100%. He's an entrepreneur now. I think I heard one of the interviews, I believe he credits, obviously, Jason House. He's a good mentor to him, to all these guys. And then James Krause, you know, those guys are buying up real estate, doing Airbnbs, and they're killing it. So I need to start learning that kind of business from those two or those three. He's a great family man. I know he owns, I don't want to give away what his estates are, but he's doing well. Yeah. Eric's doing really, really well. But that's another reason why I wanted to work with him. It's not just speed and he was a D1 national champion, you know, football player and things like that. I just saw intangibles in him, even in the Santos fight when he lost, where his body's still willing, but, you know, his mind is willing, but his body wasn't. Just certain things about him, I go, that's the kind of guys I want to work with. The work ethic inside and outside the gym and, you know, just how he conducts himself. And I just love those kind of individuals. And he is a workhorse. When I tell people how hard he works, it's really hard to find bigger guys to work that, you know, have that kind of a work ethic. And he's just a machine. And so I love working with Eric.
Very good guy. One of the really good guys in the sport. A few last quick things. Like I said, I got you here, so I just want to just rifle as many things as I can. After Eric fights on Saturday, there's two big title fights. We got Charles Oliveira versus Dustin Poirier. We got Amanda Nunes versus Juliana Pena. Do you foresee any new champions emerging on Saturday?
I hate picking, but I'm going to say I could see it in the Poirier. I feel like that's a coin toss. You just depending on how the fight's going to go. I think the Poirier's coaches are so good at game planning. I know against the Holloway fight, even they're running that left hand roll under into a shot, roll under into overhand rights. They did that same move. I'm not going to tell you what we call that, but we have a similar move like that. He used it in the corner right into the first round and got a takedown off it too. So I love the game planning of their coaches. I think Charles Oliveira is just on one these days. You see the improvement in him all around. They talk about his ground game. He has what, the most submissions in lightweight history? Yeah, which is really, really impressive with all the names out there. But his striking is phenomenal too. You talk about a chin. I mean, nobody hits harder than Michael Chandler. And he weathered the storm and then he was able to finish that fight too. So it's going to be interesting to see. I think Poirier's a little bit slower, maybe. And so the speed factor might be a difference in it. But yeah, if I had $100 to bet on it, I would say no.
It's that $100 again. No, I loved that the Chandler fight played out the way that it did, because everyone always questioned the heart of Oliveira. Like, if he gets in trouble, there was always that notion that he's just going to quit and just fold. He took a beating in that first round and then comes back and knocks out Chandler like a couple minutes later in the second. I mean, that was one of those things that sort of just closes the book on those types of discussions, do they not?
Yeah, no, for sure. I think a lot of times some of the fighters get categorized as like soft just because they're finesse. You know, they're a finesse fighter. But yeah, I don't think you can call them that anymore. But I mean, I don't think you can call anybody that literally fights at the highest level. Anybody in the UFC is going to be ranked top 50 in the world, literally, right? And so, I mean, and then when you get to the top 10, top five, these are the elite guys. How are you going to say that they're soft or whatever it may be? Some are definitely tougher than others, but I mean, they're all great athletes.
Two last things. A lot of people are wondering, and if I don't ask this, they're going to beat me up over it. When can we expect to see the Korean Zombie back inside the octagon? We host a matchmaking show. Everyone throws the Korean Zombie into these high-level featherweight fights. He looks fantastic in the win over Dan Ige. I know you're not his manager, but I know you work with him very closely. He's a name that comes up all the time. What's the latest on his plans for 2022 and when we might be able to see him back in the octagon?
He will be back in the octagon. I don't know. I spoke with him. I almost speak with him on a daily basis, see how he's doing. He kind of he's still recovering from a shoulder injury from the Ige fight, but it's getting better. He's up to sparring. He's done his rehab and stuff like that. I think we're looking early next year, I would say. But you'd have to ask Jason House. He would have those answers.
Okay. Well, fair enough. So first half of the year,
we want him back as soon as possible. I feel like this is his whole career. Is he has so many wars or fights, and then he's out for so long. We were trying to stay consistent. And honestly, we spoke about before the Ige fight, if all goes well, there's no injuries, he was going to actually just come back or stay out here another month just to train and then try to get a back-to-back fight. But unfortunately, that didn't happen.
Yeah. Well, everyone is going to be happy to hear that. And then last thing, big news broke today. You are a striking coach after all. Tyron Woodley is getting a second chance against Jake Paul next Saturday. Can he do it, Eddie? Can he do it? Did you even know about this?
I did not know about that.
Wow.
I'm not on social media as much as people think. Only on fight week when there's really nothing to do. But no, I actually picked Woodley the first fight. So I just felt like his output wasn't enough. I don't know why. I mean, that was kind of the tell of his last few fights in the UFC also. I just felt like bigger gloves, he's going to go and do it, you know. But who knows? You would think yes, but then the history shows no. So I'm always kind of an optimist. So I would say maybe yes.
Do you think the short notice helps him? Do you think it helps him though? Like, he doesn't overthink anything. He just goes in there, 12 days notice. He's going to make a bunch of money. He's going to fight. He can go in there and it's an 8-round fight again, but he can approach it as like, let's cut this thing in half. Like the Rocky Balboa versus Clubber Lang theory in Rocky 3. Like, we're not going to fight this guy for 15 rounds or 12 rounds or whatever it was. We're going to try to put this guy away in like 5. We're just going to put a crazy output on him. We're going to turn it into a brawl. And we're going to get him out of there early. No overthinking. Just get in there and fight.
I think that theory sounds great. But in the back of everybody's head is always the 6, 7, 8 round, just like a 5-round fight. If you take a short notice, yeah, let's just go for broke for 8 minutes and let's, you know, put all our eggs in one basket. But I know a lot of guys are always thinking, hey, we need to pace the first 2 minutes of every round or first 3 minutes. And then let's explode the last 2 minutes of every round. It's always in the back of everybody's head when it goes around 4 and 5, or even in boxing, you know, the 6, 7, and 8 rounds. So I would love to see him just kind of go for broke a little bit, or even pace maybe the first minute and a half or first 2 minutes and really push that last minute of every round. Have a huge volume just, and then you get to rest right after that. Then you could take another minute and a half, a minute off in the second round, the beginning of each round. So you could technically fight hard for a minute, rest for 2 minutes. That's one way of doing, you know, putting a strategy together, right? But I don't know. I think a lot of that stuff, it just starts here. I don't think just because it's short notice, people won't think, because when people get in trouble, the fighters get in trouble when they're thinking is right when they're about to walk out, or when they're in there and they get it with something hard where they didn't see it, or, you know, I think old fights come into their head or whatever their thought processes are. But that gun shy stuff is real. I mean, I would just, we use a couple of mental coaches here. Mindset Mike has been great. We worked with him for Wei Lee's camp. I think he's involved with the Figueredo camp as well. But it just really depends. It has to be fixed. I think if it's never fixed, you're just going to see the same results, the same problem occurring over and over. And so I'm not sure what he's doing to fix it. If the coaches can't fix it, they need to find another way of doing it.
Why, you're one of my favorite people to talk to, Eddie. Just a mastermind when it comes to striking and combat sports. I appreciate your time very much. I kept you probably longer than you expected, but thank you so much. I always enjoy speaking with you, like I said, and all the best to you and the team on Saturday. Happy holidays and happy new year as well, if we don't speak before that.
Happy holidays, my man. I love talking to you too. I love your show and listen to you guys all the time, and look forward to talking to you soon.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.